Hi, my name is Hua, and this is The Spoken World. As a Nigerian spoken word artist, I deal with a lot of my emotions better by putting words down to express myself. Over the years, I found out that a lot of people actually relate to what I write and how I feel. Some ask questions about the circumstances and my inspiration for the pieces I compose. So I decided to start up a podcast where, every week, I'll play one of my poems and discuss some of the issues I, or rather, we, face, and have some fun sharing our experiences. Hello, and welcome to the 16th episode of The Spoken World. Wow. It is basically 4 months since I started this podcast, and I want to thank everyone that has stayed with me right from episode one. A lot of things have happened, and I have been able to grow and learn so much writing and speaking to you. Initially, we only had poets from around the world. Now we've got both seasoned and debut authors on the show. The fact that I've been able to connect with creatives with different cultures has been both enlightening and exhilarating. For this episode, I'll be reading an excerpt from the book, The Flicker of Old Dreams, by Susan Henderson. The dead come to me vulnerable, sharing their stories and secrets. Here is my scar. Touch it. Here is the roll of fat I always hid under that big sweater. And now you see. This is the person I've kept private, afraid of what people would think. Here I am, all of me. Scarred, flabby, covered in bed sores. Please be kind. When a body comes to our funeral home, it comes draped in a white sheet. The sheets begin clean, but soon they carry the essence of the one who died. First in silhouette, the contour of the nose, a valley or mountain at the stomach, the feet turned slightly in or out, the bumps of shoulders, breasts, chin. Before I move the sheet aside, I study this landscape. At first glance, it is like a field covered in fresh snow. Then the details become more visible. Just as a field of snow, upon closer inspection, shows signs of the life that has tramped through it, so will the sheet show something beyond its surface. There are smears and drips, a spot of blood from where the IV was removed, a stain from loose bowels not thoroughly wiped, the sticky smear of saliva, the grey shadow of one final sweat. I pull back the sheet and welcome Mr. Mosley to the bright white silence of my workroom. Take his cold hand and hold it gently in my own. His face, neck, and hands are red and toughened from years of working in the sun and cold and wind. The rest of him is quite pale, soft. I don't often get to know my neighbors until we meet this way. And that is the case with Mr. Mosley. Now, before we talk about the book, let's have a brief intro about the author. Susan Henderson is a 4-time Pushcart Prize nominee and recipient of an Academy of American Poets Prize and a Hawthorne International Fellowship. She is the author of 2 novels, Up From the Blue and The Flicker of Old Dreams. I recently had the pleasure of reading the book, and without giving too much away, The Flicker of Old Dreams is about a small western town, Petroleum, that was thrown into difficulties when its powerful grain company was shut down. Having grown up in a small town, Mary Crampton, who's now 30 years, still feels like the oddball, and only has a resemblance of a connection with her neighbors when she's walking on them on her embalmment table. It was a unique way, I think, to look at death, especially from Mary Crampton's perspective, as an embalmer in a funeral home in a dying town. I had the chance to speak to Susan and ask her about her inspiration and research while writing this book. And on this episode, we'll all get a chance to be inside an author's head.
Hello.
Hello, Susan.
Hey, it's so good to hear your voice.
It's so good to hear yours. How are you?
I'm good. Is the connection okay?
Yeah, it's fine. Can you hear me clearly?
Pretty much.
All right. Welcome to the Spoken World Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, I'm honored to be on it.
So, Susan, tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, I live in New York. I'm sitting here in my living room right now with a rescue dog that's chewing on a rope. And I write, and a lot of times what I call writing is actually researching. I go, like right now, I go and explore this abandoned building, and I talk with people who used to work in it, and I sort of build a story by being out in the world. I'm married to a costume designer. He's on technical rehearsal right now for a musical, so I probably won't see him until tomorrow. And I have two boys. They're both grown, and they're both in college. They both live in Boston. One goes to MIT and studies computer science, and my youngest goes to Emerson, and he studies film.
That sounds lovely. The Flicker of Old Dreams is about, you know, the dying town of Petroleum. I really want to get to your book. How did this all start?
So it started, America right now is pretty divisive because of politics. So there's just a lot of hate happening in our country right now between the two political parties, and it's now between like neighbors and family members who stop talking to each other because of this. So I've been watching and feeling all of this for the past few years, and I wanted to write a story that kind of grappled with this this divisiveness and also maybe explored how we might start talking to each other again. So that was the inspiration, but I knew I had to tell a story that got to the issues but didn't actually ever talk about politics, because I feel like that's when we tune each other out. So I ended up writing a story about those who fear change, who are in conflict with those who are desperate for change. And I just tried to kind of open up a dialogue between all the things that people are stuck about right now.
The protagonist is Mary, who's a lonely 30-year-old, and who's had the most company embalming her neighbors. Why did you develop a character whose main specialty is death in a story about a dying town? Did you plan this?
No, I didn't. So part of the research I did for this book was I went to live in a town that's very much like Petroleum in the book. So there are fewer than 200 people in this town, and most of the people were unemployed. And I went and I lived there for a month to just kind of see, you know, because I live in New York, and I was like, what is so different about this part of the world, and why do people in New York, we're kind of not relating to these people. So when I was there, I started to feel like I was witnessing a death of this town and a way of life, and people who had strongly identified with certain careers that seemed to be dying. And so it was interesting because it's not how they saw it, but it's how I saw it. And I felt like they believed that they could always live like this. And so I knew the heart of the story was going to be about the reality of death and the belief that maybe you could fight it off. But I wasn't sure who could narrate the story. So I started to just brainstorm, and I got excited about the telling it from the perspective of someone who ran a funeral home, because I thought, well, this is someone who really knows death. She's not afraid to look at it or talk about it. She could call it out, but I thought she could also bring a sense of compassion and dignity to the dying at the same time. So that it came about accidentally, but it was kind of fun. Like, once I got the idea, I was like, okay, now I have a story.
Yeah, well, I had quite an amazing time reading the book. You had, like, there were a lot of insights and, you know, explanation and technicalities about her embalming methods. How long did it take for you to research on this?
Almost a year. I get kind of crazy about research. I think I like to research more than I like to write. So I started studying as soon as I realized I wanted to tell it from the story, from the perspective of someone who ran a funeral home. I thought, well, I need to learn how to run a funeral home. I need to learn how they do this. So I read books and I talked to people who did this for a profession, and I did lots of hands-on things, and I applied for certification for, you know, so I basically audited classes on this. And then I talked to surgeons and hospice workers, and so it was a lot of research. And at some point, it was so strange to me. At some point, I had to just kind of make up a character who didn't think it was as strange as I did. And so that's when Mary started to sort of grow in my imagination.
All right. You said you did a lot of hands-on stuff. Did you take part in embalming?
I didn't, but I watched some, and I touched some things, and then I did a lot of interview research, and then I did a lot of, I actually looked up on YouTube. I would listen to people doing surgeries and autopsies with my eyes shut, so I would just write down what I heard.
All right.
Yeah. So that was some of my research.
Yeah, and I think it really paid off, really, because it felt like, you know, the character Mary knew exactly what she was doing. Like, there was no confusion about how, even though I don't really know much about embalming, I feel that just by reading the book, I already know so much about the process and how it starts in our head. And yeah, what struck me?
Go ahead.
What struck me was how the citizens of Petroleum, who seemed so invested in the death of Doris, barely stayed till the end of the service because of the hatred for, you know, the little brother, the sissy. Do you think outside of fiction, outside of the book, these are the kinds of, like, this kind of attitude exists?
Well, so this was me playing with politics in the story, how we get so entrenched in our camps and our way of seeing the world, and how we're so quick to blame others for what's not going right in our lives, and how we're so slow to let go of hate. So I'm playing with this in the story, and the little brother in the story is now grown, but he's kind of absorbed the agony and the frustration and the anger of those who wanted their lives to stay as they were. And I don't think he deserved any of this hate, but I think this is how a lot of us this is how a lot of us, how hate gets sort of embedded in the world, is that you get angry at something and then you just kind of stick it onto someone else. So he's sort of playing that role in the book.
Yeah. You know, from the beginning, it felt like Mary already knew that she was never a good fit in the town. And then coming towards the end, when she decided to leave, do you think she would have ever come to that conclusion if it wasn't for Robert?
I think she'd learned to push down her opinions and her passions. And it was Robert who reminded her of the importance of her voice in the world and her right to choose her own direction of her life. So I don't think she realized how stuck and unfulfilled she was until she met someone in the town who had such a different point of view from the people who were normally around her. But I tried not to give... I didn't want it to be like he saved her. I think he awakened something that was within her, and then she made a decision.
Why do you think people still stay in a town they know is dying, even with all the difficulties faced, and even when there's an opportunity to leave?
So I'm someone who loves change, so it's not actually very easy for me to understand that. So I tried to focus on the grief, like treating the dying town as I would a dying person. And I think that made it easier for me to feel empathy. But a lot of where in the United States where we're stuck right now is there are a lot of people who are like, we want our country to be like it was, and it's not really practical, and the world has changed so much, and it's so much more diverse now, and so I think it's just a reality that some people are just not comfortable with change and then really, really fight against change.
The flicker of old dreams is a line from the middle of the book, you know, when Mary was with Robert at the lake.
Did you always know that you were going to call it that, and then you embedded it into, you know, the story, or you got the flicker of old dreams from the story after it was done?
The title was probably the last thing we did. When I submitted the book to HarperCollins, it was called Petroleum, and I knew they weren't going to keep that title, but it was the only one I could think of. At the end, my editor and I were just going back and forth and back and forth with title ideas, and finally I got so stuck I just started rereading the book and pulling out any series of like phrases or lines that seemed possible. So that was the one that she chose, but it was the very last thing.
Wow. How was it like developing the characters, Mary, her father, and Robert? Was there, you know, anyone that was influenced by, you know, your friends, your relatives? Some people say that authors have a subconscious habit of leaking their personalities into characters. Do you think that happened in this sense?
Yeah, I think all of the characters reflect something that I struggle with or something that I see around me. Mary is definitely the most similar to me. You know, I'm an introvert who, you know, struggles in the public world more, and just that idea of feeling different from other people. And then the dad was, when I was writing this book, my kids had just left for college, and so I was sort of trying to get used to seeing them as grown-ups, where we had always had this, you know, relationship of like mom and kid, and they didn't want the relationship to be what it had always been. There was that. And then the sheriff, I wanted to sort of grapple gingerly with the idea of police justice and how someone who's a beloved police member for some people is not being fair to other people. And then the one character who really just kind of wrote herself into the book was Doris. I had only wanted a dying mother in the story to bring Robert back to the town. And then Doris was kind of like, hold on a minute, you know, I would like more time in this story. So everything that came from Doris came, it seemed like it just came from her. It didn't even come from me. She just kind of wrote herself into the book and kept writing herself more scenes.
You've published about two other books besides The Flicker of Old Dreams. Did you know that you were always going to be an author?
So I think no, but I feel like I learned a lot when I published my first book. Until I published my first book, I didn't really own the label that I was a writer, because I always thought, well, I'll be a writer when I have something real to show people. And what I realized after I published the book is that, okay, the validation felt good, you know, it's definitely an accomplishment, but I was already a writer, and I was probably a writer when I was in third grade, because of the way I walked through the world. And I feel like whether a writer is published or not, if you're somebody who's just kind of sensitive to the world, you hear things, you notice things, you're that observer. And if you're somebody who is always like playing with the words, like if you write something, it's never good enough, you always want to kind of fiddle with the words. Those are the things that I think make you a writer. And so when I wrote the book, I was surprised, but when I look back, I realize like, oh, I was always moving in this direction. It was really just a matter of finally finding the thing that I needed to write about so badly that it was book length.
What would you say is the biggest challenge for authors as of now in 2018?
I think the challenge is always the same for authors. I mean, you can talk about, you know, whether it's hard to get published or not, but I think the real challenge is that each of us has a unique lens on the world because of where and how we've grown up, and because of the privileges and the disadvantages we've had, and because of our unique personalities and vulnerabilities. So I feel like our challenge is to find that thing that we feel desperate to communicate. And then we play with all the ways to tell that story until someone else hears it and feels it as deeply as we do. So I feel like that's always the challenge. And the hardest thing in this business, I think, is just endurance. So finding the people that keep you in the game, that keep you from losing faith, that keep you from feeling discouraged when a piece gets rejected, or when you're writing something you kind of can't figure out, you know, you get halfway in and you can't figure out where to go with it. Those are all the normal things that happen to writers, but I think it's also where we give up before we should have.
Exactly. Really. Thank you so much, Susan, for this amazing interview.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. And I feel like I'm talking to someone who's going to be famous one day.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much. And I hope that would happen. We just keep working towards it, right?
Right, right. Okay. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening till the end. The Flicker of Old Dreams is available on Amazon. Be sure to click the link in my show notes. Send your comments to thespokenworldpodcast@gmail.com. If you like this episode, please leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. Download the Radio Public app and listen to new episodes every Thursday. The theme song is brought to you by Memma Music.